Chapter 31. Once she'd picked up the letter, she flung open the door, checking again outside. There was nobody to be seen. Whoever had posted the letter had been quick. Maybe they were watching her now from behind their curtains. She shivered and went back inside. Nia turned on the light. Romeo had come down to see what was going on. The wax seal shone brightly, the red like drips of blood on the white paper. She ran her fingers over the cold seal and held it closer to the light. Was it Ruby's seal? Whoever had done this had lacked Ruby's expertise, and it was impossible to make out the impression left by the seal. Nia had never opened a letter with a wax seal before, and it made a satisfying crack as she opened it. Ruby had been right. It did feel very special. The excitement soon faded as she read the stark message inside. Leave. Get out while you can. The words had been typed. There was no signature, nothing to tell her who had sent it. Nia slumped down and Romeo came over to her. That's horrible. Childish, but nasty, she said out loud to Romeo. Someone had taken the time and trouble to type the letter, seal it, and then creep down here in the dark. They had pushed it through her letterbox, maybe even peeped inside. Their breath was in her house. Nia shook herself. She mustn't let this get to her. Grabbing the letter, she shoved it in a drawer, but the feeling refused to go. Hate mail, that was what they called it. Nia remembered Ruby using the word hate, and now someone in the close hated her. Nia checked the locks and then went back to bed, but sleep eluded her and she lay listening, waiting. As soon as light squeezed its way through the gap in her curtains, she got up, dressed, and took Romeo out. It was a grey morning and a light sea mist hung in the air. The remnants of the weekend had been cleared away. Some of the gaffers were still in the harbour, but the bunting hung limp and lifeless, colours subdued in the damp morning light. The cries of the seagulls were muffled. It was as if the town were painted today in watercolours after the bright, thick oils of the weekend. They walked along the harbour wall, and it was then she recognised someone coming off one of the yachts. Morning, she said. Joe stepped back, startled.
Oh, hi.
He was holding loaded plastic bags in each hand, as he had the first time she had seen him, but this time it struck her as odd. You're up early, she said, but as she spoke, she realised he was wearing the same shirt as the night before.
I had to go and see someone, he replied, and then peered at her more closely.
Are you okay? Nia found the gentle concern touching and felt her lip tremble. Hey, come and have a coffee, he said, and before she could hesitate, she was walking up to White's with Joe. Once inside, he ran down to the cellar with the bags and then back up to make coffee. It was strangely quiet, with no background music, no one else there. A slight stale smell hung in the air, and Joe propped the door open before making them both strong cups of coffee and sitting down with her. Better? Thank you. He sipped his drink.
You look rough, he said with a slight grin.
I slept badly.
You really do believe something happened to Ruby, don't you?
Yes, I do. I want to get to the bottom of what happened, but it's hard when everyone is so secretive.
The thing is, Nia, when you live in a very small, tight community like this, you have no idea how hard it is to keep things private. It feels like you're always being watched, everyone clocking when you leave the close and when you return.
Nia was surprised at the vehemence of his words.
I guess so.
Joe's phone rang and he got up to answer it. He spoke quietly and then came back to Nia.
I'm so sorry, I have to go out to see someone. I won't be long. Please, finish your coffee. If you need to go before I come back, just pull the front door too. I'll put it on the latch.
He hurried out, leaving Nia and Romeo alone. It felt awkward being there now, but she sipped her coffee. Suddenly she heard a door banging. She tried to ignore it, but it kept on banging, and it was coming from behind the bar. Maybe Joe had left a door open downstairs that was now banging in the wind. She had another sip of coffee and, urging Romeo to stay, went to see what was happening.
There was a flight of stairs up to what she assumed was Joe's flat, but the banging wasn't coming from there. It was a door further along. Nia went to shut the door firmly, but couldn't resist peeping in the room. It had specialist storage for wine, but also for bottled beers and other drinks. Then she spotted the bags Joe had been carrying and couldn't resist walking over to them and opening one.
"What are you doing in here?"
She'd not heard Joe return. "Nothing," she said automatically, then added, "I heard a door banging and came to shut it."
"Oh, thanks. This door is always like that. We get a draft through here."
Nia realised she was still holding on to the top of the bag, somehow unable to let go.
"I store my personal spirits down here alongside the business stock," Joe stammered.
"There's a lot of bottles," she said, holding up one that appeared to have a label written in possibly an Eastern European language. "I don't recognise these names."
Joe grimaced. "My friend brings them over for me."
The pieces started to fall into place. "Your friend from one of the yachts?" He nodded.
"Look, I'll admit he suggested I decant these into bottles people recognise. No one would notice the difference, and these cost a quarter of the price. You have to realise, Nia, I am under enormous pressure to make this business work. My parents have sunk their life savings into the place. It can't fail."
She saw the lines of stress in his face. He suddenly looked much older. "I understand that, but you could lose your licence. This is illegal." He combed his fingers through his hair.
I know, Ruby was telling me not to do it, but it's hard. He keeps bringing them over. He means well. I don't want to offend him. So far, I've been secretly handing them on to other people."
"But if you were caught, you would lose everything."
Joe sat on a stool, putting his head in his hands. "I know. It's the one thing that stops me. That and the fact my father would be absolutely mortified. Honesty means everything to him."
"You should talk to your parents. You're young. They'll want to support you."
He shook his head. "I have to show them I can do this. I don't want to be a total disappointment to them."
Joe leapt up.
"You have to promise me, Nia, you won't breathe a word of this to anyone. I promise you I won't try to use this. I have friends who would be glad of it, but don't say anything."
Nia followed him out of the room. Romeo had actually stayed where she left him. "I'll be off then."
"You'll not say anything?"
She gave him a reassuring smile, and then leant to put Romeo's lead on him. "Thanks for the coffee," she said, and then left. In the afternoon, she decided to try and tidy the garden. Romeo enjoyed having her outside, and she enjoyed being out there. She was having a cup of tea when Jade came to see her. Nia invited her into the garden and gave her a drink.
"I thought I'd let you know we have a date for Ruby's funeral. It's this Friday."
"So soon?"
"We heard this morning that the coroner has released the body. When I rang the funeral directors and crematorium, we were told there was a space this Friday. The next would be in 2 weeks' time. I think we've all waited long enough."
"Where will it be held?"
"Richie has agreed to compromise. We will hold a service at the hall for Richie and his father, but it will be short, and then we go to the crematorium. That service will start at 2 PM, and we'll close the salon for the day. There will be people coming from the mainland. Joe is putting on a buffet in the afternoon."
"And how are you keeping?" Nia glanced at Jade's stomach.
"I'm still planning a termination. I think part of me has been waiting for the funeral. I rang the hospital. I'm going in on Monday."
"Then I will come with you."
Jade squeezed her hand. "Thank you. To be honest, I'm trying not to think about it too much. So, have you found out anything new?"
Nia paused. She didn't want to betray confidences, but there were some things she could share.
"I know that Joe isn't fishing on a Sunday night."
Jade's eyes widened. She smiled.
"I'm not surprised. I never could imagine Joe enjoying handling bait, dead fish, gutting them, even standing out there in the cold. None of it seems like Joe."
"Well, it's not. The fisherman I spoke to told me that Joe had stopped going and certainly hadn't been there the night Ruby died. It does leave the question of where he was that night.
I expect he was having a drink with friends or something.
I can't see Joe ever harming Ruby. He loved her too much.
What are Joe's parents like?
Oh, they are gorgeous, really lovely. His mum worships Joe. He can do no wrong.
But how would they react if he ran into problems with the business?
Of course they'd be upset to lose the money, but I was talking to his dad, and they have been sensible, not sunk everything into the bar. They have a nice home and enough to live on. I think Joe would find it harder than them. He so wants to do well for them.
He's an interesting person, Joe. I don't feel like I know him that well. Joe's more complicated than most people realise, and to be honest, I don't fully get him. The only person who really did was Ruby.
He loved her.
Her voice broke.
We all did.
You two enjoying a cuppa?
Nia saw Lucy smiling over the fence.
Come and join us.
Oh no, I've only just had one. How are you, Jade?
Richie came over and told us about the funeral. We will be coming, of course.
Jade got out of her chair. She had suddenly turned very pale.
I need to go,
and rushed away.
Is she all right? Lucy asked.
I think it's something she ate.
Lucy seemed to accept the explanation.
I saw you coming out of White's early this morning. Is everything all right with Joe?
Nia was coming to realise that Lucy seldom missed much in the close.
He's fine.
Nia could feel a look from Lucy boring into her, but it wasn't until she spoke that she realised what was really going through Lucy's mind.
He's such a good lad, isn't he? You'd love his mum. She can't be that much older than you.
Before Nia could defend herself, Lucy moved on.
I know, of course, Jade is grieving the loss of her sister. But she looks so pale. She doesn't seem herself.
Nia looked away.
I've been watching her, continued Lucy. You two have got friendly very quickly. Has she mentioned anything to you? I'm not being nosy. I've known Jade a long time. I would want to help if I could. It's not easy when you're single, coping with everything.
She gave Nia a very meaningful stare. She knows, thought Nia. I bet she knows.
Jade hasn't said anything to me.
No?
Well, if I've noticed, others in the close will have. I am just saying.
Right, I will see you tomorrow at the salon.
She disappeared behind the fence, leaving Nia feeling unsettled. Lucy's comments had contained an edge of threat, but Nia had no idea why. Nia found it impossible to settle all evening, and realised she was continually listening for the sound of the letterbox. What if someone this moment was about to post another of those letters?
This is not good, she said to Romeo. I know it's late, but we need to get out, or I'll drive myself mad. And anyway, there is something I need to do, but I don't want to do it here. I need to get out of the town, away from our beach.
She grabbed her coat and Romeo's lead and finally went to the drawer, found that horrible letter and stuffed it in her pocket. They went to the car and she remembered the signpost to that fort further on down the road from the pool where Ian and Richie had been swimming. It was dark now, but she needed to go somewhere different and she didn't have to get out of the car if it didn't feel safe. It wasn't often that she turned right, leaving the town, but tonight she drove over the bridge and carried on up the road. It wasn't long until she was once more at the signpost for Fort Victoria. She turned off the main road and down a steep hill. Eventually, she arrived at a large gravel car park. There were only a few cars there, looking very lost in the expanse. Two sides of the car park were surrounded by tall fort walls. To her left was woodland. Nia found her emergency torch and got out of the car, and she heard an owl hoot from deep in the woods. Come on, Romeo, she said, I think we'll be okay. All the same, she put on his lead, not sure of what she would find. He was wagging his tail, nose down, very excited to be exploring a new place at this time of night. Nia looked up. The sky was enormous, with only a sliver of a moon, but thousands of tiny stars twinkled back at her. It was beautiful. Her own personal planetarium. There was enough light for her to make out arches in the wall, and she could see beach beyond. Carefully, she walked to an archway. Further along the sea wall, she saw a few fishermen and for the first time in her life, she understood the attraction of coming out here alone for hours. The tide was in. Fortunately, she didn't have far to walk to reach the sea. Taking the letter from her pocket, she tore it into tiny pieces. She moved Romeo's lead to her other hand and then walked carefully over the pebbles. Reaching up, she then threw the tiny snowflakes of paper into the sea. A gust of wind scattered them, and she was pretty sure they were all caught by the sea. The main thing was it was gone. The sea had the words now. She went back to the safety of the arch and looked out into the darkness. It was time to go, but she was aware of a reluctance to return to the house. And then she realised why. The letter and those words might have been swept out to sea, but as Ruby had said, their hate remains. She guessed, like Ruby, this person would like her to also disappear. Nia took a deep breath. She had faced so much lately, but she was still standing. It had not broken her. She must now find the courage to face whatever lay ahead of her.